Welcome to The Other Side of 40. My name is April Grant, and I'm here to help women make positive changes with their lives after the age of 40. Let The Other Side of 40 become your community to find inspiration and support to start the next chapter of your life. Hello, welcome. Today we have Suzette Vernon, and she is a passionate life coach and relationship solutionist who has a signature program called Music Math Approach to Relating. In her coaching of high-achieving women who oftentimes have had at least one divorce in their past, she saw a recurring theme. They lost themselves in relationship. Suzette was very familiar with their plight, so therefore, she changed her life and really looked for love. When folks tell her she's lucky that she found someone at the age of 50, she responds, "Luck had nothing to do with it. I worked for this." So, welcome, Suzette.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here, April. I'm so excited about what we're going to talk about and how we're going to just bring some magic to people's lives. So I'm very excited.
So today you're actually on the podcast as an expert, as a life coach, but I asked the question, did you have an awakening moment? And if so, tell us about it.
Oh yeah, I've had many being 60 years old now. But I can remember one that really changed the trajectory of my life. I was 52 years old, and it was in 2012. I think that would make it about right. I got a sudden phone call, and it was my cousin, who was like a brother to me, I come from a household of girls, so we were really bonded at the hip. And we were the same age, and I had been trying to get up with him because his father had died, who was his last living parent. And I wanted him to know that he wasn't alone. He was an only child, and I wanted him to know that he wasn't alone. So I kept trying to get up with him, Well, I looked down at my cell phone, and I saw it was him, and I was just like, Lawrence. And I heard tears. I heard sobs and tears on the other end of the phone. And I'm like, yes. This is weird. This isn't Lawrence. And it ended up being somebody else who was on his cell phone. And they said, "Suzette, he's gone."
Wow.
"Suzette, he's gone." I'm like, "Gone where?"
Right.
Like, why are you using his phone? You know, maybe this is a wrong number. They said, this is Suzette, right? I'm like, "Yeah, this is Suzette." And she said, "Your cousin Lawrence is gone. He's on the kitchen floor.
Oh.
They're trying to revive him.
But
he's gone." And that shifted my life like nothing had ever shifted it before. I'd had minor shifts, but this was an earth-shaking, molecular moving shift.
Yeah.
And at that point, this question, even in the midst of all my grief, my not understanding, my shock, my inner self asked me this thought-provoking question. Because we were the same age and I didn't expect them to die. And that question was, if you died right now, would you have any regrets?
Yeah.
And I sat with it and I was like, yes, because I haven't lived my life. And I realized I had been living somebody else's life. I had been living what my mom thought, what my dad thought, what my community thought, what my church thought. I was trying to live up to being the responsible, you know, daughter that would never cause her parents any trouble, the responsible Christian that God would say, you know what, she's really trying, she really wants to do this thing right. But I realized it wasn't my life. I had not given myself permission to live my life, to color outside the lines, to test the waters. I had lived so conservatively that I had not really lived. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, because we were both at the same age. And I remember his dreams. He wanted to find love. He wanted to get married. He wanted to have kids. He wanted to do work that he enjoyed doing. And he didn't get a chance.
Oh, goodness.
And I just felt like, oh, my God. He just died suddenly. And it was over. And at that particular time, and I'm not a woo person. I'm not a person that talks to ghosts and sees spirits and nothing like that. Not at all. But I can tell you, I was crying so hard one night saying, why? I was just in the throes of grief, looking out in the darkness. And I really, really believe that he visited me. And he says, Suzette, don't be like me. Hmm. You still have time. You still have time. I know you're trying to be responsible. I know you're trying to do this thing right. But you only have one life.
Right.
There's so much waiting for you if you would just stop being scared. Stop holding yourself back. Stop holding on to these excuses because you're afraid to leap. And just go for it, girl. Try it. Try it. Mm-hmm. And that changed my life, April. That truly did change the trajectory of my life in every area.
So what was the first thing you did after having it?
The first thing I did was leave a job that I hated.
Oh, I've heard that.
I had hated it for a while, but of course it was paying the bills.
Yeah.
I was a single woman. My son was in college. I realized that the reason I took the job was because of him, and that with him being in college, it was no longer, the reason was no longer valid.
Right.
And I realized I hated my job. Now, I realized it before he died, but after he died, it gave me permission.
Right.
It gave me permission. That was the first thing I did was I left that job. I did not have a plan.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. I was like, did you know what
I was having to make it? I was having to make it up. And okay. I would not recommend that people just do that. Because the way down can be very bumpy. I still made it. But falling like that, you hit rocks and you hit sides of things and you twirl and it. I would not recommend doing that. Yeah, but I do know that my parachute did work.
Yeah.
It did work.
Yeah, I know for myself, whenever I start getting antsy at a job, I know it's time to leave because I know I don't put my all into it anymore. But then I also start looking for the next thing. So I never quite leave without knowing what the next step is. And people always laugh. They're like, you don't seem to stay very long. I think the longest job I've had is 5 years. And I said, yeah, because I feel that I got all of what I needed to learn out of it. And for most of my positions, there's not been a lot of upward movement. So it was like, what am I staying for? Just a paycheck? I'm not staying to, I'll get mediocre raises, but I could do something else and get the same amount.
And that's similar because it's almost like my 4.5 to 5 year mark is when the awakening happens. Mm. You look around and you're like, you realize that where you are, whereas it might have served you at some point in your life, it's no longer okay. It no longer fits, and you're no longer comfortable. Yeah. And that tends to happen with me at about the 4.5 to 5 year mark. I know some people it's every 10 years, but for me it's like every 5.
Yeah, I would say about 5 years is, you start looking around and saying, I need a new challenge. I have this under control. And I think I like change and I like growth and I like to learn new things. And I can't, if no one's there to guide you, you can't really learn new things, especially in the position I've been in as a manager. You're kind of at the top. So there's no place to learn or anything new. And unless they hire someone other to help, it really just becomes the same day in and day out. And I personally could never take that. So I know you talked in your bio about finding love, and you said you found your love at 50. And you tell us about that. That relationship.
And it was so funny. We're talking about the 5-year mark. And I was thinking, wow, usually about 4.5 and 5 years is when I realize I'm not with the right person.
Okay.
Or that this season has come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, it was in marriage, because, you know, you get married with the forever thinking.
You do.
But at the 4.5 to 5 months with my ex-husband, I was like, what am I doing here? This is not working. What I was tolerating, what I was hoping for, what I was praying would change, what I thought that if I just rolled up my sleeves and really gave it the old try would change, I'm realizing it hasn't changed. Right. And if I'm looking at him and looking at me and looking at our character and looking at our life rhythm, it's not going to change. That usually happens. And that's what makes my marriage to my husband that I have now significant, because we just celebrated 5 years in December.
Congratulations.
And we're on our 6th year. And I can tell you, April, I would marry him again in a minute.
Wow. So what did you learn from the first marriage that made you come in stronger with this marriage and make a better choice, a better partnership?
I learned that marriage isn't something that you just try on. It isn't something that you leap, like we were talking about, taking that leap.
Mm-hmm.
And because you look at all the rom-coms and everybody is like taking a leap of faith and taking trust. And I know that for some people that worked for them.
Right.
So no shade. But for me, my leap was more of a fantasy. It wasn't built on something substantive. I didn't even know myself well enough to make a decision, a lifetime decision. I didn't even know how to recognize healthy in a man. I didn't even know about emotional availability. I didn't even know about how you're supposed to be treated. All I had was an example of what I didn't want.
Right.
I didn't know how to get something different.
Right.
And so what I learned is I had a lot of things that I had to unlearn that were unhealthy. They were familiar,
right?
But they were unhealthy. And if I did not make the effort to unlearn them, to practice them, to have somebody walk me through my blind spots, to help me see what I couldn't see, to help me break it all down,
mm-hmm.
only to rebuild again in a healthy manner, I was doomed to keep attracting the same man, just wearing different clothes.
Yep.
And so by the time I met my husband, I had not only worked on myself, but I also worked to understand men, because I had a dad that was in the home. He was a great provider, but my mom and dad's relationship was not the model of healthy.
Right.
And so he could not guide me in choosing healthy. He could tell me to keep my legs closed. He could tell me, you know, what all men wanted, but he didn't even give me a healthy view of men.
Right.
Of what to look for in a husband. It was all of, well, you know, you don't know him till you marry him, and then you just pray, and then you just stick can stay. But that was the extent of it. And so here I am marrying blindly. And I realized with my husband that marrying blindly is not healthy and it's not mature.
No.
It really is not. And I say this because a lot of us have been raised on a heaping helping of Walt Disney and Cinderella and Snow White and romantic comedies. But the truth is, the romance phase of the relationship is the most immature phase, but yet we get married in it.
Oh, I never thought about it that way. I mean, personally, I was never my favorite Disney character is like Belle and Jasmine, people who are fighting the system, fighting the status quo. So I never really believed in the woman, you know, just lying there and one day someone's going to kiss her and wake up. And that's probably from experience, watching the relationships around me. I didn't really see anyone who got married in this fantasy world. Now, that doesn't mean I had healthy relationships to model. I just saw that wasn't that, you know, the waking up getting kissed by Prince Charming was just not the way it goes.
I was hoping to escape. I think I was trying to escape loneliness. I was trying to escape feeling like I was the odd person in my family. And before I even knew my name well, my mom would sit me in front of the television. And back then, it was a little black and white television with the hanger in the back. My mom would sit me in front of that television and I watched The Secret Storm. I watched The Edge of Night. I watched Guiding Light. So I looked at these soap operas. And I saw men and women hugging and kissing each other and excited about each other. Then I watched Disney and I saw, you know, love and somebody coming and you being chosen, you being preferred and them whisking you off to a better life. And so in my childlike mind, I felt like my escape from loneliness, my escape from feeling like I'm the person in my family, my escape from feeling like I'm the middle child and nobody sees me, that marriage was the gateway. Yep. It was the path. It was the door to being loved the way I wanted to be loved, to be seen the way I wanted to be seen. And so that was what was in my mind. And so I never learned to vet for the long term. I never learned it. And so I had to work on myself, it's true, but I also had to work on learning how good men show up, how healthy men show up.
Right.
Not perfect men, because pain can make you look for perfection. Yeah. But no, I'm talking about healthy. I'm talking about somebody you can build with, somebody you can trust your heart to, someone who's not going to call you out your name or treat you badly just because they disagree with you. Somebody that's not going to make you feel like a slave because they're tooting submission. Somebody whose ego is not going to be greater than his desire to have something real with you. I had to learn those things.
So and where did you go?
A lot of that's okay. It took therapy. It took a combination of things.
Okay.
It took me reading relationship books, first of all, to kind of get straight. It took me reading relationship books about men from male authors.
Oh, okay. That's important.
Because who knows men better than other men?
Right.
So I had to start looking at it. My cousin that I talked about that died, he became my go-to when I would be interested in a guy, because I needed somebody who wasn't going to try to run game on me. Right. I needed somebody who wasn't trying to tell me what they wanted me to think. Mm-hmm. You know, I needed somebody who really cared about me. And my cousin, the one that I mentioned earlier, was my go-to. He was the one that when I got over my pride, when I got over my, I think I'm smarter than a fifth grader, you know, when I got over all that stuff, I'm an accomplished woman. Surely I can figure this out on my own. When I got past my ego and realized I don't know this, I'm not good at this, I keep attracting unavailable men, I'm stuck in a cycle and I can't not get out. And reading books alone was not going to do it. So I read books, yes, and that opened up a space for something different. But then I had to sit and have a teachable spirit so that a man could teach me about men without me having to judge the rightness and the wrongness. And this don't make no sense. And I don't get this. And oh, this is just a bunch of BS. I had to sit down and say, wait a minute, he's a man. Whether I agree with it or I don't agree with it, he's a man.
Right.
And he's telling me how men show up. And so it was so funny because I thought, because I was liking this guy, that my cousin was wrong. But can I tell you, he was 100% right. And that was what knocked me off my high horse.
So what did your cousin suggest to you about the guy?
Oh my God. He was just like, it was funny. He would always say, this is on page 33 of the player's handbook. Everybody knows this. I mean, he would just, I'm like, I need to get this player's handbook. He was like,
you're like, where can I buy it? Where can I buy it?
He's like, nah, if I give it to you, we'll have to kill you. You know, I'm like, oh, come on, come on. But it was, he would tell me things like, don't rush. Give him time to show you who he is. Yeah. He would give, and another thing of advice he gave me, he said, don't tell him what you're looking for in a man. Okay. Let him work for it. Let him work to try to please you to figure it out. He said, because too many women tell men what they want, and any man can pretend. He said, a man can give you what you say you want long enough for him to get from you what he wants.
Wow. Okay.
So I was like, okay. So there was some wisdom there as well as I know about men. And so it took that, and it took continuing. It took me opening up. It took me becoming interested in understanding men on their terms. And by doing so, it made me become more clear about who I was, how important I was, and that my standards matter.
Your standards definitely do matter. Now, out of the books that you read, do you remember any of them that really were highlight, like they were very pertinent in your education about this? Do you remember any titles?
The first book I ever read that made a difference, that broke me open, if you will, that helped me to start working on some areas within me that were sabotaging me, was a book called Love is a Choice. That book shifted everything, because up until that point, I thought you fell in love.
Oh, and yeah,
by falling in love, you go from being this sensible, accomplished woman to enlisting in the deaf, dumb, and blind section.
Yes.
You know, yeah. You can't eat, you can't sleep, you can't think, you know, it's almost like coming to America, whatever you want. And you just cease to be able to function because you're so consumed with that man.
And keeping him.
And keeping him. Exactly. And Love is a Choice helped me to realize, no, you choose. You have the power. You can say no to what you don't want. You get to choose. Love doesn't sweep you up.
Right.
And grab you and toss you around. And it doesn't mean the end of you. It doesn't leave you less than. It doesn't leave you stupefied.
Right.
That love is a choice. Real love, real healthy love is a choice. And when you lose your sense of choice, you're not healthy. When you lose your sense of choice, you're codependent. And when I started realizing that the media and all this makes codependency sexy.
It does.
It makes it like, oh, this is love. Oh, you're in love, girl. That's all that's going on. You're in love, girl. I'm like, no, you're in need. No, you're in lust. No, you're in longing. That's what you're in. No, you're longing for him to be the right one. You're in longing, you're in need, and it can feel like what they describe as love, but no, love is a choice. When I read that, I can tell you, I think I read that book, and that book had to be about 300 pages. I read it in about 2 days.
Wow.
I was reading that book because it was like, it was giving life to me.
Right.
In a way I had never experienced. It legitimized me being who I am. Mm-hmm. And not feel like I had to change to something that I wasn't.
Right.
That was the first book that really broke me open. The second book, and people argue it, they argue, but the relationship book that helped me, especially being an African-American woman, mm-hmm. that really made sense to me was Steve Harvey's Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, Think, something like that. Mm-hmm. That book helped me a lot because I said, you know what? He's bringing it to us from an African-American male perspective.
Yeah.
And I want to listen. And that book helped me a lot. And at that time, I was dating my husband that I have now. And I would share with him different things that Steve said. And what made my husband extra special, I already knew he was special, but he said, he's right. And most guys that I would listen, that I heard, they'd be like, uh-uh, that's not right. That's not right. That's not right.
Trying to deny it.
All of us aren't the same. Oh, no, don't listen to it. And a lot of women would get confused and they listen to the guy saying, no, that's not right. He's talking in absolutes. No, that's not right. But I listened. I read it and I took it to heart. And some of the things that he said, I did. And one of those things he pushed was standards.
Standards.
He pushed standards. And that's when I started giving myself permission to walk away, even if I liked the guy, to walk away from anybody that made me feel like my standards were wrong.
Well, I know when I was dating, I mean, I've been married 13 years in with my husband for 17, 18 years now. But I remember even being young, I would say I've never had a bad relationship. And people look at me crazy. People look at me crazy because you know how you were just saying that honeymoon phase, that butterfly phase is the immature phase. And for me, I would look at when I dated a man, if they couldn't even act right in that stage, how are they going to act once it gets serious? Because this is supposed to be the fun part. So if you're already doing things like standing me up or calling me out my name or being super, being emotionally abusive.
Yeah, condescending,
any of those things, you're already doing that and we haven't even started. So why would I want to continue this work going forward? And I pay a lot of attention to how they treat you, not just like generic things like he's not tall enough, he doesn't look like what I thought he'd look like. But I had a lot of first dates and I would finish and it wasn't that they were bad guys. They just, mm-hmm. I knew they were not going to be right for me. Mm-hmm. I knew that the way things they said or the way they treated me. Like I had one guy, it was an Ethiopian guy. He wanted to introduce me to his mom on our second date. Yeah. And I was like, see, y'all, you way too intense.
What's the rush? It's like, what's the rush?
We're taught
like, oh, when they rush, that means they found who they've been looking for and there's no reason to look for anybody else. And when a man knows you're the one, why should he look for anybody else? And so that we've romanticized it. But I'm gonna tell you, every time I've been rushed, it's never ended up well for me.
No, and you're not, because it's never like now well. This relationship is about, now we're already getting other people involved and now mm-hmm. the stakes are higher and I barely know you. Like we've only gone out once. I'm just getting to know who you are as a person. I appreciate it. I think it's nice, but it's not like we had this deep conversation where I, you know, talked for hours. Like my husband, our first date, we talked for I think 6 hours that night. And we had been talking online way before that. But when we actually had a date, we talked all night. It wasn't like that. It was like we had dinner. And by the end of the dinner, he was talking about he wants to introduce me to his mom. I'm like, see, you're on some different level. You're already controlling our relationship. It wasn't even a, would you like to meet my mom? Because that's a different feeling because you're not being pushed. So you could say, I really like you. I would love if you would meet my mom. But no, he was already making plans in his head. And I realized he was going to be very controlling about our circumstances just from that one statement. And I'm very intuitive. And I was just like, nope, I know where this is going. I've seen it. And I'm not someone who needs to, I pay attention to how people treat other people. I don't just pay attention to how people treat me, because often the way they treat that other person, they can very easily treat you that same way.
Yeah. If you disagree,
if you disagree, you don't like something.
Yeah. You'll find yourself being treated the very same way.
Right. So I don't need to learn the lesson myself. And I never have. I've always been very observant on how people treat other people. And so when dating, I could very much see how they treated their friends, how they treated me, how they treated the help. Like, you know, if we went to a restaurant, if they were rude to a waitress or waiter, that was a turnoff for me, because I'm like, this person's just trying to do their job. Unless they're openly rude to us, which they rarely are, it was no need to be condescending or rude to them, you know, and saying niceties like please and thank you meant that they cared to take that extra step. And so I just really, the guys that I dated seriously before my husband, I've always thought they were great guys. They just weren't a fit for me.
Right.
And that's the other thing we need to learn, is that just because they are nice and just because they are good people doesn't automatically mean they are the right person for you. And that's okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because for a lot of women who have been neglected or have felt like their fathers might have been present, but they were still absent emotionally, or their fathers left their mothers, or something happened with their fathers. A lot of times, if a man pays attention,
yes,
it's like a moth to a flame.
Yep.
We need it so badly that we'll miss every, we'll explain away every red flag that even Stevie Wonder could see, you know, because we so need that attention. And it's funny, because I'm 60, but I've seen this grow up in women even as we've gotten older. This need for attention, and it'll cause you to rush. It'll cause you to skip steps. It'll cause you to explain things away. It'll cause you to change and become somebody that you're not, just because you just want somebody to make you feel like you're okay.
Right.
Someone to make you feel like you're lovable. Somebody to make you feel like you're worthy, like you're worth it, like you're enough. And so that's why what I do is, it seems to resonate with people between the ages of 35 and even as far as like 62, 65 years old, because so many of us have grown up in age.
Yeah.
But that 5-year-old is still picking our person.
Right. Well, that's why I asked about, you know, what did you do to take those steps? Because I think a lot of people want to break that cycle. They want to get to that next stage, but they just really don't know how. Because
what's out there isn't helping us. It has to be worked out. The longer it has stayed in you unresolved, the more it has calcified, the more it has become a part of your experience. It's become a part of your story. It's become a part of you. And so sometimes I think as we get older and we're smarter and we have accomplished things and we have achieved things, we think, like I said, we're smarter than a fifth grader. We can read a book. We can figure it out. But then what happens is we meet that man that triggers that desire in us, and we forget everything we read. And so it's like the mindset. So many things have to be shifted intentionally and focused, working on it. We have to work that out. We have to work it out and deprogram and reprogram. And that's why I say one of the main things is coaching. And for a lot of people, they're like, well, I'll just take a course. I'll just read a book. And they think that's enough. But no, the coaching holds you accountable. The coaching holds up the blind spots. The coaching holds up a mirror. And the thing about it, when somebody has been through it, I've been over the river and through the woods when it comes mm-hmm. to relating. So I know all the things we do
right
to keep ourselves in denial. I know all the those places that when you're going in that cycle again, I can say, wait a minute. Haven't you seen this tree before?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta go, you know, and you need somebody to do it because you are stuck in a cycle. And
yes.
you can't break your own cycle. You need somebody who can say, hold on, wait a minute. Let me hold up a mirror. Wait, you said you wanted this, but you're going in that way. Help me to understand that. You need someone to keep you awake
yes.
so that you don't get lulled back to sleep by your issues. And so one of the things that people they underestimate and they minimize is coaching. Coaching keeps you awake. Coaching helps you to get out of your own head. And so that's one of the reasons that I became a coach, because I knew it was needed. It's so needed. If you're going to break cycles of failed relationships, you need a coach. Therapy is great for helping you work out issues inside of you. But relationships that are a contact sport, it's relating. It's more than just you. So just working on yourself is not enough. You
okay.
need to work with somebody to stay awake. You need to work with somebody to help you to unlearn some things so you can attract something different in your life. Or when the same thing shows up, somebody saying, wait a minute, isn't this the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this, you know, and you can say, oh, wait a minute. Now I'm being challenged. Now I need to take a step back and look at things that I might not have looked at.
Right.
So coaching is very necessary. And that's why I do it, because there are people my age that are still being taken to the cleaners by men.
Yeah.
And they're blaming the man, but it's not really him. It's that you need to know what you don't know.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books, relationship books, is called The Five Love Languages. Have you read that one?
I've read that one and I love it. I just realized there's some more to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it, because just learning that person's love language is not enough to settle arguments and conflicts and differences that come up in relationships, as you know.
No,
it's not.
Well, that's where I was going with the book is, if that partner understands how to speak your love language, that's why a lot of other things get overlooked. If you're someone who loves to get gifts, and this person brings you a gift every week, they're talking to your spirit. So even if you're mm-hmm. not trying to like them or love them, you're like, they're speaking your language of, I got a gift or acts of service. He's always at your house doing stuff for you, always cleaning your car, taking it to get washed. And they're just speaking that love language. And with that though, comes the blinders, you know, I'm
yeah.
just going to forgive, you know, all these other things because they do speak my language, instead of thinking
yes.
of, I need this other stuff to be good. And speaking the love language is nice, because definitely it's important. It's part of it. But the rest of it, I really find the love languages are good, actually more for positive, just, positive interactions, and keeping the love is a choice alive. Keeping that alive with the love languages, because then, like, for example, my husband and I, we did the love language test, and he likes words of affirmation. Well, I always mm-hmm. say thank you when he does. Mine's the acts of service. So he always does things for me and I say thank you. And in my head, that was enough, because I'm showing him appreciation every single time. I'll say please, I'll say thank you. And he's like, I need the extra step of acknowledging what I'm doing for you, so it doesn't seem so robotic. And I was like, that makes sense. I can do that, because then that fills up his spirit to continue to want to do acts of service for me, because there are lots of things that I don't like to do. Well, mainly it's cooking. I don't like to cook, and he does. So I appreciate him making me all sorts of meals. That fuels it. But problem solving, I don't know if the love languages have any help in the problem solving area at all. It's just a way to continue speaking positively into the other person's life.
And you bring up a great point, April, because some guys, especially if men have been in the dating game for a while, some men are just good at dating.
Yes.
They're good at knowing what to give you.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So that person might give you gifts in the very beginning, but then you marry them and you find out they just did that to get you. That right. really wasn't who they are. And I think that's a very important thing, is that you have to stay around a person long enough to find out who are they. I interviewed this man named Tim T. Sahura.
Okay.
For my You Ask Good Men Answered Summit. I have that summit every year. And one of the things he said is you need to fall in love with the man's lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting because I had never thought of that before. But the truth is, and as you know it as a married woman, that's who you're going to live with every day.
Oh, yes.
You're not going to live with the person that gives you gifts all the time. You're not going to live with the person that's going to whisper sweet nothings all the time. Because when you're dealing with the household and the bills and the children and all that, you're going to be dealing with the character of the person, what has been honed and is mature and what is not.
Right.
And so if you fall in love with the lifestyle, like one of the things that my husband and I do, it's not big when you look at what people look for, but it's mm-hmm. so real and it's so good. We both are nerds. So yesterday for Memorial Day,
you're right.
give us a plate of food and we watched old Star Trek.
Okay.
and we're loving it.
Right.
You know, and so it's great because our lifestyles align. Sure, you know, there's still the whole Mars Venus thing going, men and women, but we enjoy the same things. We love going for walks.
Yes.
And enjoying nature. We love going to restaurants, but we just as soon pick up a sandwich and go and sit on a park bench. You
right.
know, so there are things that we discovered through dating that we both were very similar. We went to similar places. We love jazz. We love going to places that play live jazz. And it was so interesting. One of the first places he suggested we go, I was like, I love that place. And so we're able to talk about it. And there's so many things in our life rhythm, in our life force, mm-hmm. in our lifestyle that complement us being together and enjoying each other without having to plan a date or plan a this. Our regular lifestyle fuels us both. And so it was very interesting to hear Tim T say that. And I'm like, you know what? That's sustainable. That keeps us intimate. It keeps us together.
Yes. And doing things together as opposed to apart. I'll even take it one step deeper with living in, how does he live in his house? Because if he doesn't clean when you guys are dating, you go to his house and the house is a mess. He doesn't do dishes. Bathroom's a mess. That's who you're marrying. That's the person mm-hmm. you're marrying. He doesn't just wake up one day and decide he wants to have a clean house. He doesn't want a clean house, and nor does he care. Hence the reason it looked like that. He didn't care. And it's not it's not a judgment call. It's
right.
just, and that's what we need to get over. It's not a judgment call to say that we have different cleaning levels, but know that if you're going to move forward, you will probably assume most of the cleaning. You will be the person.
Or you have to agree that you're going to pay somebody.
Or yes, yes.
And then do it.
Or you pay for it.
Because
you need to make sure that it also meets your standards. Doesn't mean the standards have to fall. It's just you have to come into the relationship knowing that is not his strong suit and that is not what he's going to do. So
exactly.
If you want
to, or his mama's ironing his shirts and you don't know it.
Oh,
his mama's doing his laundry. There are 30-year-old men.
That's my husband.
Whose mama or grandmama are still washing their clothes. Mm-hmm. 40, 50-year-old men. I have a cousin. Mm-hmm. He drives, I'm not going to shout him out. He might listen. But anyway, I have a cousin. And his mom still does his laundry. And he's older than me.
Oh, No, my husband, actually, his mom did his laundry for a long time. We would go over and visit, and she would pick up all the clothes and wash all the clothes. I was like, why is she doing our laundry? She's like, she just does it. So every time he would go home, he would just bring home the clothes, and his mom would do it, fold it, iron it, put it back mm-hmm. together. And I wasn't used to that. I've been doing my own laundry since I was, 13? So I'm not used to, to anyone else, like, taking my laundry or folding it or doing anything with it. So I would wake up, I'm like, where's my clothes? She's like, oh, don't worry, my mom will bring it back. And for me, initially, it was kind of startling, like that control of, why is she taking my stuff? But then I had to realize this is her love language. Her love language is acts of service. She likes doing things for people. But the danger with that was always, if it's like, if it's a piece that you love, but it's like kind of used and worn, it may not make it back to you. She would be happy to clean it out and it disappears on you. And I'm like, where'd it go? But she'll replace it. She doesn't just throw it out. She will actually replace it. And you'll have like a brand new pair of shoes. And she's like, well, I noticed the old ones, the other ones are getting old. I'm like, but I really like the shoes. So
can I have my shoes back,
please? Can I have my shoes back? She's like, well, I kind of threw them in the trash, and yesterday was trash day, so no. So, but she's a lovely woman. I love my mother-in-law. So,
oh yeah, I love mine.
But
too.
You know, realizing that yes, men still get their laundry done. I would not be surprised that if he were to walk out of here today and had a bag of laundry and walked over his mom's house, she wouldn't even think about it. She wouldn't even ask questions. She'd be like, all right, I got some laundry to do today. That would be it. But finding out those things, which you can't find out without having discussions and having talks and really getting to know someone. And
yeah.
On the other hand, it's beneficial that he has a good relationship with his mom, because does feel comfortable dropping his stuff off and her taking care of it. But then you also got the other side of how invested in the relationship is his mom. So it's all the things you need to look at when things like that appear. And it's not a black or white thing. It's not a judgment call, and it's not black or white. It's just what's acceptable to you, mm-hmm. and how much is he, if it's not acceptable to you, how much is he willing to change? And that's at the outset, because if he really likes his mom doing his laundry and he don't want you touching it, that's going to be a problem, because that means that's going to have an impact on where you live, how far away you can be, how involved she is.
Yeah. And it's kind of bad, because in the sense that our parents, in the natural order of things, will expire before we do.
Yes.
And so I try not to start any kind of habits that I know there's an expiration date I can't assume it. And I guess it's because I am 60 and my mom is 88. Okay. There's certain things that she might have loved doing or might have been comfortable with doing, but I'm slowly taking them over because I realize she's not going to always be here.
Right.
So I try to live mindful of that. Now, I still love her chicken and dumplings. Don't get it twisted. And her sweet potato biscuits.
Right.
Honey.
Right. No, you still need your mama.
Potato biscuits that'll make you slap somebody. But I'm also trying to learn how to do it myself.
Yes.
So that if that should happen, I can still have a sense of her presence and the love that I feel from it. And be able to pass it on to my grand twins.
I did want to ask another question that you had in your bio about music math approach to relating. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. It's founded on what I call three critical factors of enoughness. It's your voice, your value, and your vision.
Okay.
And by amplifying, or using a math term, multiplying those, it allows you to experience love and life in a different way. Because I observed relationships, and I observed my own transformation, and I realized what music and math represented. Music Well, let me start with math, because math is where a lot of us high achieving women are very comfortable. Math is the calculating, the doing, the performer. That's what math is. It's the multiplier, it's the addition, it's the working of.
Right.
And music is the vision. Music is the dream. Music is it's the melody that plays inside of you.
Okay.
That so desperately wants someone else to hear it and appreciate it.
Okay.
Whether that someone else is you, hearing your own heart song, your own soul's desire. That's the music. There's a musicality to it. And then the mouth is the worker bee. So it takes a collaboration, a marriage, if you will, of both music and math in order for your relationships to have harmony, to have balance. Words that we toss out all the time that are music and math terms, but they are very relevant when it comes to relationships. And so I ended up putting that together, and I identified those three critical factors, because if you don't feel like your voice is being heard, if you don't realize your value, and if you don't have clarity for your vision, then you're not going to have a great experience of love or of life.
And can you give us a practical application of the music math approach?
A practical application is, first of all, when people come in, they tell you what they've been doing.
Okay.
You know, I do this, I do that. And my job in using music math is to help them to get to their authenticity, their core, which is the music. What is it that you desire? Right? What is it that's broken? What is it that's not working? What is it that causes you to feel like you're out of alignment, you're out of balance, that things are not right? Let's take a look at that. Let's look at that. Mm-hmm. And look, starting with the music first, and then having the math, how are we practically applying it? Let's look at what you're doing in your life. Let's look what you're doing in your walk. Let's say somebody came to me saying, you know what? I'm not happy at my job.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that a lot of people can relate to. I'm not happy at my job. Or for the sake of relationships, since we're talking about relationships, let's go to that. I'm not happy in my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's wrong with your relationship? I feel like everything that I'm doing is for everybody else.
Right.
It's for the kids. It's for my husband. But I feel like, but what about me? You know, we hear that a lot, but what about me? Usually I can start a series of questions that ask them, okay, what is it that you really want that you're not getting? Mm. Well, I feel like I'm being taken for granted. I feel like everything revolves around my husband, around my children, around that. Okay. In what way are you feeling taken for granted? So one of the things that I do that's a technique is the five whys,
okay,
where you ask that person why. And five, of course, is just a number, but mm-hmm. you keep asking them why until they get to the real heart of mm-hmm. what it is that they're missing.
Okay.
So why do you feel this? And they give you an answer. Well, why do you feel that?
Right.
And so the goal is for them to go deeper out of their head and more deeply into the real core of their pain.
Right.
What is it that's really, really happening? I feel invisible. I feel like my dreams are dying and nobody seems to care. So yeah. It's using that technique to get down to the music that for whatever reason is being drowned out mm-hmm. by all the noise of other people, getting them down. So that's one technique that I use to help them to get down to it. And then from that place of identification, then we can start saying, okay, How are we seeing this in other areas? We start identifying, okay, this person has a problem saying no. So it takes the emphasis off of everybody else. And it's like, okay, how am I owning this?
Okay, so it helps you get down to your actions and how your actions are contributing to what's going on around you.
And to your base of power. Okay. You are your base of power, which is another math term. You know, when you're talking about exponents and all that, it talks about the base number of power, right?
Right.
Which represents you. You're the base number of power. And you have the power to manifest and recreate your surroundings. Something as simple as saying to your husband, babe, I don't want to do that.
Right.
And explaining to him, it doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't resonate. It makes me feel like I'm losing me. It allows you to say things that usually you don't talk. You sigh, you know, and you expect people to read your body language,
right,
to read the eye roll, to read the sigh. And you and I both know men and children do not speak eye roll. They do not speak sigh.
No, they don't.
They do not. So helping that person to get down to what's really bothering them so they can articulate it, so they can give it words in a way that doesn't attack the people in their lives. And by doing so, you are owning your power, and you're inviting other people to become allies of helping you to become better. Because a lot of our struggles are because we don't know how to express it. And so that's just an example of a technique that I use with people to help them to, they're on the performance end, but let's bring the balance to the music end.
Nice.
Because what's being neglected is your music.
Okay. Wow. That's a great explanation.
Yeah.
We have been talking for an hour. So it was really good.
Good editing. We're so happy with editing.
No, I try to edit as little as possible. I think the conversation is natural and that's where it should be. I just wanted to ask you, where can people find you online?
Sure. They can find me at my website, which is SuzetteSolutions.com. I love my hangout spots that I love the most on social media are Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
So you can find me at Your Coach Suzette on both of those platforms. And that's where you'll find me the most. And also I have a podcast that I absolutely love. It's called the Enough Factor Podcast, another music math kind of thing. What is your enough factor?
Yes.
And so I have a podcast where I help people redefine what makes them enough in life and in love by amplifying those three things, your voice, your value, and your vision. I have some solo podcasts, but I also invite guests, and hopefully April will be a lovely guest that I have.
I would love
that
to.
Will help people, help them to stay awake to their enoughness, because they are already enough. It's just that they need to be reminded. And so I have guests that help remind them in life and in love, whatever that area is, that they are enough. And so it's called the Enough Factor Podcast. That's on all major platforms. It's on Apple, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Anchor, Podbean. Even you can tell Alexa to play Enough Factor Podcast and she will do that.
Yeah. I got a chance to see if I could get my podcast, if it's already there. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, if it's Apple, you can tell Alexa, she automatically goes to Apple. I found that out recently. So sometimes I'll be downstairs fixing breakfast and I'll say, Alexa, open Enough Factor Podcast. And she'll open it. And I'm like, oh, that's me.
Yes.
But you can find me there. That's my host. That's the hosting platform, and that's enoughfactor.podbean.com. But you can also go to SuzetteSolutions.com and click on the navigation bar podcast, and you can listen to it on any of those platforms I have, where you can just click on your preferred platform. It's right there. You don't have to hunt for it. And you can listen that way as well.
All right. And I am also found on Other Side of 40. I'm everywhere Other Side 40. No spaces, no dots. And that way I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I have a Twitter account. It is not being updated. I just saved the name. just so no one is putting other content on Other Side 40. I don't really actively post, but I also have a Facebook group that I would love for your participation in, where we have open, frank discussions about what's going on in our lives and how to genuinely fix them and change the trajectory, your next chapter to be different than your current chapter. So, and I want to thank you again, Suzette, for coming on, and I look forward to speaking with you more in the future.
Thanks again for having me on, and I really enjoyed it, and I hope to be on again.
Yes, sounds good. Bye. Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Other Side of 40. You can find us at our site, theothersideof40.com, and on Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Other Side 40.